everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here for part two of episode two of season four, Freak Show. And I don't want to waste any of your time or my time. I want to tell you about my two favorite funky fellas and how they met. And that's Dandy and Twisty, and I'm also here with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. I should introduce the co-host.
Yeah, that's really bad of me.
Tag yourself.
I'm here with my two funky fellas who met Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. That's right. No.
That is very reminiscent of when you introduced Slow Beef and I, though. Not gonna lie, very similar vibes to when we actually met.
It was definitely funky fellas running into each other and being like, "Oh, the clown that jacks off."
Which one is it? I'll never tell.
We were at the scene where we were back at the Dandy Mansion, and Mama Dandy was introducing Dandy to the funny clown she brought back home, who is Twisty, who still no one has noticed is a problem until Dandy, who clearly realizes he's a huge problem, and he loves it.
Yes.
He's all about it.
I mean, I think I might be too if, like, I found out that the clown my mom picked up off the side of the road was not only a regular clown, but is also a murder clown. Because I'd be like, I would be a little disappointed if he wasn't. Like, if my mom picked up a clown off the side of the road and it ended up just being, like, a normal hee-haw clown, I'd be a little mad, actually, I think. I'd be like, this one sucks.
What if it was a famous clown?
Define famous clown, like Bozo?
Yes, like Bozo. I was trying to think of another famous clown, and
Pennywise?
Then I blanked.
Not one.
Yeah. Art the clowns
from
Terrifier?
It's not fair. I was born and raised in the Chicagoland area. I've visited those buckets in person, motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't think I would. I still don't think. I think if, like, first of all, I don't know enough about Bozo the Clown that if you were like, "Hey, this is Bozo the Clown," yeah. I don't think I would know. I'd be like, "Oh, I believe you."
Yeah, I was gonna say, in retrospect, I would definitely need him to be like, "I'm Bozo the Clown." I'd be like, "Fuck yeah!" If he didn't, I'd be like, "Cool, the clown." And he'd be like, "I'm Bozo the Clown." I'd be like, "You're famous clown."
Hey, even better. Hey, two for two. Yeah, all right.
Do you think Twisty took real money from Gloria? Because, like, she's like, "Do you do parties?" Like, do you think she, like, handed him, like, $400? And he's like, "What the fuck am I going to do with this?"
They keep alluding to the money that she paid him. But, yeah, like, the whole time I'm like, well, where does he put it? Or, like,
yeah,
does
he
even know
spend
how to use
it?
Money?
Where is he going to spend it? Is he just going to walk into, like, Burger King and be like, and shove a bunch of money across the counter?
Maybe she just, like, turned her purse inside out into his bag, and it was just full of, like, those, like, old person butterscotches.
Ooh,
just, like, a bunch of those.
Werther's originals.
Yeah, Werther's.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. And it turns out Twisty's just never had one of those before, and especially with, like, the no jaw thing, but the mask, the way those roll around, he's going ape shit.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
Great payment.
Now that we know that they have met, that's where we ended our last episode, was them, like, well, it's Dandy, like, seeing Twisty, who is standing in Dandy's toy room, and I don't mean, like, an adult man cave, I mean, like, a toy room full of toys for a child, but, like,
like
big,
a toy chest,
yeah.
Filled with, like, a little rocking horse and shit, yeah.
Yeah, Twisty's just in the middle of it, standing on a little mini croquet field, and Dandy, like, hauls ass across the croquet field thing, and, like, it kind of looks like he hugs him, but that would, I don't know, it cuts away before he does it. That would be very funny, but also very strange. I kind of like it. It's, like, the idea of just someone who either A, it does not clock him as being a murder clown, which isn't Dandy, but, like, it's every other person for some reason in this show.
Yeah.
Just running up and, like, giving him a big hug. That is such a funny trope to me, is, like, someone oblivious, like, running up to the killer in a horror movie and just, like, embracing them.
It's very Elmer Fudd not realizing Bugs Bunny is not a woman, you know? Like, in fact, the rabbit he's been hunting, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Clark Kent and Superman, but yours is way more embarrassing, so I like it more.
Either way, whether they hug or not, which I hope they do. We don't get to see it if they do, but it looks like they do. Then that's the end of that scene. And now we have to start a weird subplot. The subplot we split this episode in two parts for because it is equal parts infuriating and confusing. We introduced in our last episode, at the beginning of this episode, that...
Desiree and Del.
Yeah, yeah. Our newest... they're not really freaks. The newest additions to the circus, ? Smoking hot Desiree, who has three titties, and that's her deal. And Del, who is a man who is, I guess, maybe stronger than average. It doesn't matter.
Stronger than a regular man. I'll be honest. He looks like he can bench about what I can. Like, not incredible. Yeah, he's like a big guy.
He's the kind of guy that, like, if you're carrying something heavy and that guy's around you, you would be like, hey, can you help me with this? Like, there's no question he looks strong, but not like, holy fuck, that's the Hulk.
Gym, like, yeah, in a gym, yeah, in a circus, not really, you know, like...
Yeah. Like, I'd see this guy, like, moving some weights and, like, turning red and being like, huh, 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 and I'd be like, nice, get it, brother. But, yeah, like, paying to see him in a circus? No shot. Like, how string bean ass is your whole town? What kind of, are there no farms where you live? Like,
was nobody, like, lifting weights in the 1960s? Like, was that just not a thing back then? And so when someone was really strong, they were like, shit!
After the war, there was a shortage of those big balls that they put on the end of sticks to make old-timey weights because they had to fire them all out of cannons.
Yeah, so, that
then they
true.
Invented plates, and it all changed.
I'm not going to Google it, but that sounds true, so I believe you. That seems right. Ugh, but it's time for their subplot, and not really even their subplot. It's more like Del's subplot, which is... not
like
great.
Del and Jimmy.
Yeah.
But like Jimmy doesn't get to know about it. So
yeah. The plot is taking place in spite of Jimmy for most of the episode instead of like including Jimmy. It really makes like if you're paying attention and trying to actually get into the like story of the show, it's actually quite frustrating because they're doing like a very, very long extended version of the bit where two people are talking about two different things and not understanding why they're having conflict.
Right.
Because, like, one is explicitly withholding information and the other one is too dumb to read context, I suppose. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't even blame Jimmy. We'll get there, but I can't even blame Jimmy because, also, like, how would he know? Why would he know?
Yeah.
Quick question. Jimmy's supposed to be, like, at youngest, like, 20, right?
Yeah.
Like 20 to like 24, youngest. Somewhere in there.
Right.
That's an adult man. You can just talk to him. That's the age where you stop like hiding this stuff and you just go, hey, I'm your dad. Like, that's I think, right? Like at that age, I feel like you have to at that point. Well, either way.
I do have to say, as someone who was adopted, it is and knows both of my biological parents, especially when I go and see like my biological dad's side of the family, who almost never sees me. Like they know of me, but like I kind of float in and out for like big family events like weddings and funerals. It's always very funny when I show up and they're like, who the fuck is this person? And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm Michael's daughter. And they're like, Does he know that? Like, as if I chose that specific family gathering to show up and be like, guess what? I know we're 31 years late, but guess what happened 31 years ago? It is a very funny dynamic, and I kind of wish that they would play into that more because it is a very funny interaction, at least for a bit. But they don't. They don't. Not in this show.
No. There's just not cool enough for stuff like that, yeah.
And as we've kind of telegraphed a bit, the way that they cut into this is we cut away from Dandy, our two favorite boys, Dandy and Twisty, to go back to the circus, where Ethel, who is Kathy Bates' character, the bearded lady, is, like, smoking, and she waits to see Desiree go to, like, the shower tent, and as soon as she does, she goes to, like, talk to Del and his trailer, and I'm like, is there not a shower in that RV? Oh well. And then Ethel like gives us exposition by talking, by playing the pronoun game and like referring to a he without really saying who it is until she finally reveals the he she's talking about is Jimmy. And we get a flashback to when Jimmy was born. And Del, for really kind of no reason, being like, hey, little baby, I'm gonna kill you. And then Ethel pointing a gun at him. And being like, don't kill my son. Don't kill our son. Ta-da.
And, y'all, if you've listened to this season or this show long enough, you know I love Kathy Bates. You know I think Kathy Bates is a delight in every role she is in. In this episode, her fake accent is such a fucking mess. There are times where I legitimately had to like rewind scenes and watch again. Not because like I didn't understand. It was like she was so in between multiple accents that I processed it as like three different sentences and was like, well, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
She goes like so many strange places. Like it's this weird like a southern accent that becomes like Irish, that becomes Scottish, that becomes like Welsh sometimes. It's it's not good.
Yeah.
It's not great.
It's 1,000,000% one of those like, like, I don't know what we're doing here things. And you're Kathy Bates, so you know better. What, come on, pick one. But absolutely, yeah.
She heard that Sarah Paulson was going to play two characters this season and was like, me too, but only in accent form. and that's where we're at with that. It is, like, I think, I don't know, like, there is, like, some, like, they try to do, like you said, like a Welsh accent, but also it's like kind of Midwestern, but also Canadian sometimes. It's wild. Like,
it does hit a little bit of that like Thunder Valley, deep Minnesota. Yeah, occasionally too. It's weird.
It's very weird.
And I'm not sure what it's supposed, that's the worst part, is it's not clear what it's supposed to be. Because Jimmy doesn't like super have an accent, and when he does, it's like Evan Peters doing the accent he does for every character, which is like old timey guy from the 1950s.
It's me.
Yeah.
Evan Peters.
It's like the one thing he can do. So he does it for every character that he plays. And I can say, spoiler, in future seasons, he's also going to do that voice.
It's great, though.
Cool.
It's not, but it is.
And you might be tempted to say, well, Liz, are you sure that's just not what Evan Peters sounds like? It's not. I promise. He talks like a regular guy in some of the seasons. He knows how to do the old-timey newsboy voice, and he does. So it's not clear where he or his mother are supposed to be from. Del at least kind of has a similar accent to Jimmy, but that doesn't make any sense because the day Jimmy was born, she had to like stop him from killing him, and then they left. So,
and what are we doing with Del's character? Because like, you know what, like, I know I'm not supposed to like him, but holy shit, it's a lot to just be like, I'm killing a baby. You know, I can't take this anymore.
You're right, because it's so, like, 0 to 100 also. It's like, here's Del. He has a wife he really loves, and also he got jealous one time when he found someone sleeping with his wife, and so he might have some anger issues, but he's a good wife guy. 35 seconds later, I'm gonna kill this baby because it's got lobster fingers. Like, oh my god, Del, relax.
I know.
And I have to imagine they met at like a freak show, him and Ethel, because otherwise, like, why are they into it?
Super into like... Yeah, he's, like, into, like, the code of conduct of the freak show. Like, he knows freak show law. Like,
yeah.
He gets into, like, debates with the head of the place. Elsa?
Elsa, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, he gets into debates with her about, like, freak show law and gets her to be like, yeah, actually, you have a good point, Del. So, like, having him just be like, I hate freaks is, like, really weird.
Yeah.
Especially given his wife.
What he says verbatim in the I'm gonna kill this baby scene is, I'm saving you from a lifetime of pain, little guy. And it's like, what? You're like, this is, like, your job. Like, you just...
Right? Yeah.
You gave birth to a new employee. What the fuck are you talking about? Like... This is... I mean, listen. I understand that it's not, like, the greatest situation for Jemmy. But, like, if you're in a family of Olympic athletes and you happen to be born extremely gifted at a sport, then that's just a bonus for everybody, because now your parents won't be disappointed and you can be a part of the family business. Like, that's basically what Jemmy got born into, but instead has lobster hands.
But, you know, I guess, like, he, like, grew as a person, right? Because originally it's like, my boy's got lobster hands, get this freak's gonna die. But then later married a woman with three breasts, so he's like, ah, you know, I've learned to be more accepting in my life. That's how
this is character growth.
Yeah, that's my Dell character arc.
But, I mean, but, like, he was with Ethel. Ethel's the bearded lady in the freak show. So, like, he's obviously always been down for getting freaky, TM.
So to speak. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, then we cut back from that conversation, and Del just says, yeah, hey, that's cute that you think I give a shit about Jemmy or you, but I don't. I had problems in Chicago. You might have heard. I can't remember. Does he threaten her? How does he threaten her?
He's like, I wouldn't be talking that way to your new boss. And she's like, you're not my boss. And he's like, I am. Right. And she's like, okay. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think that's where they drop this.
This is like, I think it's just bad editing that turns into accidental foreshadowing of Del deciding to make a big move on the big top and becoming the big man,
yeah,
which he is just gonna do, I guess, for some reason.
It's very odd because not only does he just do it, but, like, you know, he, again, like, I think I mentioned this last episode, like, he starts off very, like, well, Elsa, we got nowhere else to go, please let us work, and then all of a sudden it's like, now that I'm in here, I'm taking charge, and it's like, that's quite a heel turn there, like, quick, you know.
Yeah. Well, his only character motivation is lying low. Like, that's it. That's the one thing he should care about, according to everything we know about him as a person. But instead, they're just like, well, he does a little bit, and then he just, you know, he can't turn it off. You know, Dale.
Yeah, it's very wild, because he's, like, very, it's not, like, the kind of thing where he's like, I kind of like the power of being able to boss people around. It's like, no, this is the opportunity I've been looking for. Now that someone has let their guard down around me, I will own this circus. I am the king of the circus. And it's like, oh, okay. I thought you just needed, like, a job, dude. What the fuck is this?
You know how ambitious, like, people with on steroids are, right? Like, you mean about gains? No, about jobs and security and all. Yeah, like...
And what's, I think the more confusing and wild part of it that makes the whole thing so confusing is, like, starting at this point with Ethel being like, oh, okay. Every person that Del does this to is just like, yeah, okay. When he's like, I'm the big rat that makes all the rules. Everyone's like, yeah, all right. Like, for no reason. Yeah. For
you
no
got
reason.
It, Charles Entertainment. Yeah.
And, like, the thing about it that's like, it makes it all super, super weird is that, again, A, he doesn't have any motivation, and B, like, the whole thing we've seen thus far, because to me, I don't know about you guys, but to me it feels like we've done 17 episodes of this season, even though we're on episode 2. It feels like in the 17 episodes we've done so far, all that we know about the circus people, because we've been given such shallow, like, interactions with this huge cast, is... Mm-hmm. They're all bound together by a terrible secret, which is that they murdered a police officer and they're housing a murderer, the twins. And also their circus is their only safe haven, and it is in danger of going bankrupt or dispersing or something. Like, so they're a very tight-knit group.
We're going to lose the orphanage.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
And they're a very tight-knit group being brought together by hardship and adversity. And then that's not, like, typically the type of group that just, A, lets a new person in with no hesitation, and B, just accepts when...
Oh, so you mean
when...
like somebody who is explicitly also running away for a murder they did commit?
Yeah.
When that's like currently their big problem, they don't want to maybe like double that. Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, but like that person is like, I'm going to subordinate the person that's been housing you guys and is in charge of you guys. Like, and I'm just going to do it with no warning. And everyone's like, yeah, okay, that's fine. We're not going to stand up for our leader. She's probably cool with being walked all over. She seems like the type who would love that, who would love being walked all over by a stranger.
We don't stand up for each other unless we have to stand up for each other. Like, all right, Jimmy, I don't know what you're saying here, but...
Yeah, it is just very, very bizarre. And we get like an intro to that in this scene because now it's, well, at the end of the last scene, he like threatens Ethel and is like, oh, I wouldn't talk to your new boss that way. And she's like, okay, I guess I take your word for it that you're my new boss. And then like when she leaves, we get like a weird short shot of like him clearly feeling bad, which is wild because he's about to become the biggest piece of shit for the next 15 minutes of television.
Seriously,
so him feeling bad, I don't know if that's supposed to make us be like, wait, I know it looks bad, but you still need to feel bad for this character later on. I know he tried to kill a baby, and that's a lot to take in, but...
He was drunk, you know, yeah.
I know we only know two things about this guy. One, he murdered a gay guy, and two, he almost murdered a baby. Stick with me. He's about to have a character arc.
You'll like.
So, where's the good part start? Is that soon?
Not this episode.
Okay.
Oh, is there?
Yeah. So then, unfortunately, we cut to the source of another upcoming musical number because you know they're going to do it again. Dot and Belle are practicing their singing, and the kind of goofy one, Bet, I think,
Bet,
right?
Yeah, Bet and Dot.
Yeah.
I can't keep them straight. I'll just be honest with all of you.
Yeah. I'll just say Goofy Twin is trying to do singing and is just horse piss at it, just completely off tone, off pitch, off, you know, just real, real bad. And then they're kind of giving a whole like, oh, try it again. No, you got to sharpen up this, that, the other. And, you know, kind of trying to coach her into not being crap. But it's like one of those things where this person is so far away from singing in a way that's entertaining, it's going to take us months. You know?
Right, yeah.
And then Desiree walks on stage and really does bring to a head what my question was last time, which is, Desiree, what do you do at a show?
Yeah.
Desiree runs up and goes, you should do this show we saw that was incredible, where I saw a lady just bunch of ping pong balls out of there. And it was like, hey, this isn't that kind of show. Like, that's like a different show at a different venue entirely.
That's what I'm saying about her having three titties. I'm like, how is that going to contribute to this specific circus?
Yeah. Like,
are you just going to whip them out and be like, is this anything? Is this doing it?
For the fellas.
Oh my god. Yeah, no.
Yeah, but
she does like play the piano for them. But I feel like that was like a pleasant surprise for Elsa, not like why she agreed to let Desiree be in the show, cuz like I don't think she knew Desiree could also play piano on top of having three titties. I don't think she knew that was like part of the package deal. So it's kind of nice that it worked out that she can play the piano.
Right.
And so they asked pretty point blank, okay, Dot, well, Bet tried. Do you have any talents? And Dot gives a bashful, no, I don't, until Jimmy walks up and goes, well, so you do. Why don't you sing for me? And she goes, oh, okay. Well, if the funny little newsy boy wants me to sing, then I got her. And holy shit, every time they have Sarah, I don't mean this in a mean way, they overproduce her so bad. It's like aggressive. Like, there's some times where I was like, damn, Sarah must have been like not even close, because that shit sounds like the inside of a 2012 studio and nothing else. It sounds like, damn, I hear them tools. Like, shit, man. It's rough. And so I can't remember. Do they have her sing? Here they have her sing like a normal song,
yeah,
right?
This is like just like, yeah. I don't remember what song it is, but it's not like a cover. Well, I mean, it might be, but it's like an old song.
It's not
strike you as inappropriate.
Yeah.
It's not spoilers, the thing that happens later. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just vibe checking, making sure it wasn't that one.
Yeah. No,
So yeah, the Dot sings. It's, you know, presented as like incredible. And Elsa and Bette are both upset by this. Bette makes a little more sense, right? Because she wanted to be the performer and now she's being one-upped or whatever. Elsa, this is what you hired her for, I think, explicitly. This is why you're covering up for a murder? Yeah, is for this. Am I mistaken?
Also, if you didn't want her to sing, if you were like jealous of her singing when you're the singing person, you're the boss.
Teach her to juggle.
Yeah. Teach her to do a different thing.
I guess it's supposed to be her pride and all that, but the problem is, like, it seems like it goes against, yeah, everything she's done up until now, you know? So it's like, it doesn't work for her character exactly. Because she is supposed to give a shit about, like, the other freaks and everybody and like try to help them out, but here it's just sort of like, I'm gonna, you know, I can't let a good singer in. And it's like, well, why was she even auditioning then, you know? Like, or I guess
why'd you have her why'd you ever do this? Like, you're the one who's telling her she has to do a thing. Tell her to do a different thing, like you said. Teach her to juggle.
Yeah, but
well, it's time for the fucking bowling ball of a human being to roll onto the scene. And it's Del, baby. Del rolls in the tent and goes, hey, idiots, we can't do a show at night because there's a curfew. And everyone goes, yeah, Del, we're aware there's a curfew. It's like a huge problem. We're going to do a matinee daytime. Which, like, is honestly, like, a little reasonable. Elsa's like, no, the freak show only works under the mystique of the night. It only works when people have their guards down and their imaginations up. And Del's like, we gotta make money. So, like, how about we fucking open when we can be open? And, like, maybe we just, like, make it a little more kid-friendly and make it more accessible for early hours. You know, sell more cotton candy, more peanut. Like, everything. And
like kids like more than ping pong, right? Like, no, not now. Not now.
Not that, sweetie.
Later.
Maybe when the curfew was lifted.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so this is like the crux of why Del is going villain mode here, and it's a real problem for the writers because it's like a pretty reasonable thing for Del to want.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, we can't work during these hours. Shit, that sucks. Okay, I guess we open up earlier then, which, like, yeah, if Twitch told me tomorrow you're no longer allowed to stream like at my normal hours, I'd be like, that fucking blows. Guess I stream earlier now.
Yeah,
like, that's really all it would be. Like, damn, it sucks, but what do you do? So to make it clear that Del is supposed to be the bad guy in this exchange, they immediately have like Elsa give this big flowery explanation about, oh, people only want it at night. And then Desiree being like, listen to Elsa, sweetie. And then they have like Del borderline look at the camera and be like, I fucking hate listening to women and I'm not gonna do it.
But like, I can't get over it. Like, he just did this whole thing that was like, I need this job so bad. Thank you, Elsa. Now I'm your fucking boss. And if you don't like this matinee, tough shit, because I'm going to go put all these flyers up. Hey, how did he print up a bunch of flyers that say the matinee's at 3?
Who gave him access to a printer?
He had them already. He was just hoping this would come up. He's been just waiting. They've been in his trailer this whole time.
The actual crime they were following me for was an unbelievable string of counterfeiting. I have incredibly high-quality printers in this RV.
What if he, like, misprinted the flyers to 3 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock, and actually the plan was to cover that up?
I ain't listening to woman.
Honey, I'm gonna take a bath on all this blue ink. We gotta stick with the showtime.
I'm into misogyny now. I ain't listening to a lady. What's going on at 3?
I decided to pick up being a piece of shit.
That's my act. How you like?
Oh my god. Yeah, so that's Del now. Del doesn't listen to women. That's his whole deal. Surprise. Even though he's like, again, it's such whiplash because I know it's taking us 2 hours to talk about this episode, but all of what we're talking about transpires.
The wife guy murder was like 15 minutes ago.
Less than that. It was like 5 minutes ago. Like, the whiplash on this guy is we're introduced to him. Okay, he's a huge wife guy. Oh, okay, he's also Jimmy's dad and kind of a piece of shit who tried to kill him as a baby. All right, he's mean to Ethel. Okay, now he's trying to run the circus. Oh, he hates women now. All in the span of 5 minutes. And it's, we're not even
He's just
done.
A bulky white man. He's just a bulky white man in the middle of this room of people with, like, character.
And it's not even, we're not even done yet. He's going to have a few more scenes that are also unhinged, that are new villainous things he will do. But we'll get there. So... He's not listening to women, but thank God we get to go back to two of God's specialist little guys, Dandy and Twisty. And Dandy's giving Twisty a puppet show, and Twisty is just watching, just soaking it all in. And then Dandy gets, like, a little bored with it, and he's like, hey, Twisty, do clown things.
Dandy does one of has the funniest exchange I've seen from a weirdly written Dandy lad, and I love it. It's perfect. Of he's trying to recreate the play The King and I with puppets, and then he starts like having a breakdown of just like, oh, this isn't as good as the real thing. You know it. You know this is horseshit. Puppets are but a poor simulacrum for the grand stage. And then it's just like, it's like, I'm bored of this. And like goes off. It's so good. Like he just has this weird thing where he like starts to try and show a thing to a friend, but then when they're not immediately interested, like gets so in his head about it. It's awesome. It's such a good breakdown. Dandy is so much fun. I love this character. And yeah, Twisty's just like sitting there like a little confused by this. Dandy walks up and yeah, just literally is like, well, clown it up. Clown it up, clown man. I'm bored, and Mother paid you to make me less bored, so clown it up.
This means she was right, though. It means she knows her son very well, because he's super hyped about having a clown.
And, Twisty just kind of looks at him for a second, and Dandy, after staring him down and giving him, like, a weird smirk, is like, your silence is provocative. And then again, we get a beautiful moment of Twisty's actor just really hitting a beautiful, oh, brother, with just his eyes.
It's a really good face. It's really hard to explain if you're not watching along with us, but the face that he makes at that exact point is just really good. It's probably, dare I say, one of the funniest things in this show, because like they don't really land comedy very often, and this is almost entirely like the actors doing the writing. Has almost nothing to do with it. It is exclusively the actor's interpretation of silence that carries it.
It's like working under restrictions, right? Because like the character can't speak, has a mask over the lower part of their face, and like has a dedicated costume for a bunch of stuff. So like they're restricted to just the eyes and the forehead, which I guess that's like just the actor zone, huh? For the most part.
Yeah.
Rarely do you get directions that mention your forehead wrinkling correctly.
And he does a great job. Sure. He really, the guy who plays Twisty does a great job. Yeah. Again, Dandy's like, your silence is provocative, and I'm like, you would fucking love mimes then. If you think a silent clown kicks ass, I have great news. There's like a whole genre of them called mimes. You'd fucking love it. And then he's like, hey, little buddy, go do a clown thing. Go dig through my toy box and then pull out a thing to do a clown show with. And Twisty does it. For what it's worth, like, Twisty's, like, not being an asshole. He's, like, playing along. He's like, okay, I'll be a little clown. Oh, you like being a little clown guy.
This is, like, honestly my favorite thing about Twisty, like, genuinely, is that, like, he is just a character that you don't know what the hell's going on with him. Like, he kind of, you're kind of like, is so he wants to be a clown? He doesn't want to be a clown? Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. It feels like it's, like, if you just vibe with him and, like, don't freak out and just, like, be fine with a dog shit clown.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just okay with that, like, you'll survive the night. But as soon as you're just like, oh my god, then it's like over, right? So
right, yeah,
that's
yeah.
kind of a fun character.
I also love, like, and he is like this in service of the show moving forward, but I love it from the perspective of loving Twisty as a character. Is he is a murder clown who wants you to participate in his clown stuff, it seems. And he's like, he really does genuinely want to perform. But if you're like a little weird and make him uncomfortable, he's not just going to murder you. He's going to leave. He's going to get so uncomfy that he's going to leave, which I think is such a funny dynamic for a fucking murder clown. That
right?
His answer isn't just to fucking kill Dandy. It's, I have got to get the fuck away from this weird guy. He is freaking me out.
Because, as Twisty is digging through the toy box, Dandy starts looting around in Twisty's sack and sees something that clearly draws his interest, which is almost certainly like a body part of some kind.
Right.
Yeah. Twisty eventually turns around, sees what's happening, sees that he's digging through the sack, grabs a juggling pin and gives him a quick bonk. Like, doesn't kill him, isn't like, I'm going to murder this fool. He's just like, oh no, you saw my penis. It hits him in the back of the head. Like, it's like more of a, like, a moment of panic. He just swings it and then he's like, oh my god, no, my best friend. He's like, I gotta go.
And he's honking the whole time. It's very similar to when he has his breakdown in the bus in the last episode. He does this very funny thing that would be very hard to replicate by any of us here, where, like, when he gets agitated or startled, he just starts, like, honking behind the map. It's like, it almost kind of sounds like a seal, but from, like, another room. And he just kind of does that into his mask over and over again while he's, like, panicking. It's kind of like in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie when Leatherface is just really stressed out because there's people in his house.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar energy to Twisty responding to most things. I love him. I love Twisty, and I love my stressed little disease clown. And he's like, I gotta get out of here. I'm so embarrassed that you saw my sack. And Danny's like, no, my best friend.
All right, everyone. I regret to inform you, it's time to get to the scene where they tried to write a sit-in protest, and they did it so bad that you want to side with the diner.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Fuck me, they did this so wrong. Holy shit, Slow Beef. Would you like to talk about this? Because I feel like you were the one who had the most, like, gut, like, I need to talk about this, man, reaction.
So, yeah, so Jimmy shows up with the everybody in the circus, and there's that, like, record scratch moment, and you see all these 50s diner people around, like, what the heck are these freaks doing in our diner? And Jimmy's like, hey, brought some of my friends, if you want to come have food, and they're all, like, watching it, and it's, like, it's going to script, because you kind of know in your mind, like, how this is going to go. They're going to, like, not really want to serve them, but they're going to, like, kind of have to, and everyone's going to be put off by it, and so it starts off kind of that way, right? And they all sit down, but then Jimmy acts like he's, like, the scoutmaster or something, you know, like, as he starts telling them, like, all right, everybody, good manners, all right, put your napkin in your collar or whatever, we're not gonna spill. And it's like, you know, Jimmy, like, a lot of them are adults, you know, like, they know kind of how to eat and stuff, you'd think.
You would think that, but unfortunately, Paul the Laminated Seal makes a big move against what you're saying.
Yeah, so...
No, not Paul the Laminated Seal!
Right.
That's right. Paul the Laminated Seal fucks up again.
Fucking Paul. And, yeah, because, like, so this guy is like, I'm out of here. I'm done eating if these freaks are going to be here. But he just says, I'm done. I'm like, you know, clearly that's the implication. He, like, stubs out his cigarette and walks off. And then Paul, who, yeah, even though I just said I think they're all adults, goes like, well, if he's not going to eat it, and then, like, flippers over, like, grabs his, like, little, like, plate, you know, and, like, scoots it over in front of him, you know? And he starts just, like, eating the leftover food with his hands. And then
yeah, like someone else had a 3/4 left meal, and he's just like, oh, I'll just eat that then, which, like, you're not allowed to do in a restaurant.
No. Like, what? Yeah, what are we doing, Paul? Like, you know, so then the waitress is like, I'm going to bust that plate. And Paul's going to, like, he's just like, get out of here. Like the way a bear would, like, you know, and...
Like a dog, if you try to take a bone away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's because this is, like, now the turning point where I'm like, no, I absolutely see the non-freak's point of view here. Like, they shouldn't be acting like this, but...
Like, at first, I was like, okay, you brought in, like, too many people for this small of a diner without a heads up. Like, kind of a cock move, just showing up with, like, 15 people and not being like, hey, is it cool if we have 15 people in right now? Because, like, that's, like, a lot of people to just slam a diner with. And then, yeah. Yeah, folks just start screaming, and then he's just stealing plates, and, like, it really is just a case of, like, no, I think y'all might maybe should fuck off.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, like, yeah. And Pepper and Salty start screaming, like, we want meatloaf, and it's, like, honestly quite annoying. So, like, I am somehow absolutely now with the people in the diner, like, yeah, these people suck. They're awful. Like, what? Jeez. So, you know, I guess I'm not supposed to feel that way or whatever, because, like...
No, it's a sit-down protest. Yeah. Like, it's clearly supposed to be the people refusing to leave the diner who are in the right. Like, they're referencing historical things that happened in America. But, and unfortunately, they're fucking it up so severely that even my, like, mental link to reality and history is, like, not enough to, like, correct the errors they're making nonstop in presentation. It's nuts.
It's really bad. It's really, really quite bad. So, yeah. And then, so Dell then comes in and is like, what the hell are y'all doing? And, you know, like, you're screwing up. Like, you shouldn't let these people see you and stuff. And, like, he's right because they're terrible customers. But he really means, like, you shouldn't be out.
He says, why will they buy tickets if you're out here just for free giving them the show? Yeah.
And then, like, he drags Jim, and he's, like, telling Jimmy that, and Jimmy's like, we just want to be, like, normal people and eat and have a life and dreams or something. And Dell just starts beating the shit out of him. So, okay, you know, great.
Oops, we made Dell too reasonable again. Fuck, how are we going to fix this? Have him do violence.
You're fucking done, Jimmy, I guess, you know, but all right.
By the way, I'm your dad.
Yeah, real Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker vibes with this fight. Gotta say, this fight outside the diner. Big no, I am your father vibes from Dell, except for that doesn't ever come up. This is what I was saying earlier of, like, it's really awkward for us, the audience, because, like, we know, and Dell knows. But Jimmy, who is, like, a 25-year-old man, doesn't. It's not like a 7-year-old boy. Like, I feel like this would play better well, maybe not him, like, beating the shit out of him. But, like, it would play better, this whole, like, oh, I'm your dad, you don't even know type thing. Would play a lot better if Jimmy was not 25 years old or older.
Yeah. No, yeah, it totally doesn't work, honestly. But here we are, regardless, so.
So now Dell has escalated again. To a new bad thing of beating the shit out of Jimmy.
Instantly.
Yeah.
For no real reason. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And then it's time. It's Twisty time. But Twisty needs to go back to his bus because there he left his oven on. Whoops. And he's got to go back. And in this case, his oven is children, two of them. And one of them, the older one, Bonnie, realizes, hey, we should probably, like, try to figure something out, and, like, pulls off a bit of, like, board with nails in it off of the wall, and kind of, like, tries to hide it behind her back in just, like, truly the worst way possible. Twisty comes back in, sits down and really does have a how about them bears, huh? Like, kind of like, oh, what a fucking day. You wouldn't believe it. And does, and this is one of the most confusing and funny moves, takes the little toy robot he got from the shop, winds it up, puts it down, and as it's like kind of like doing the little walk along the floor, it kind of throws his arms out in front of him and like does the monkey along with it to kind of like imitate the robot.
Is this anything?
It's very funny. It is legitimately very funny. And just having the kids sit there in horror watching it is like, again, it's a pretty good scene. I like Twisty's all right. I can see why they brought back Twisty for later stuff. He's pretty good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so he just kind of stares one of the kids down and is doing the monkey while a little robot kind of goes across the floor at him. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, well, I guess this isn't working. I really thought that robot, that's like, that was from a store. That's new. That's the new hotness. I thought the kids would be popping off for this, but oh well. I'll, you know what? I'll show them my favorite thing. Maybe they'll love that too. And so he pulls out a severed head. And then they go, the kids start screaming, reasonably.
It's beautiful. Twisty also starts out, this is what I love about Twisty. You have no idea what the hell is going on with him. Is he friend? Is he foe? Does he just want to make you laugh? Is he going to kill you? We don't know. That's Twisty. It's great.
And every time Twisty does something, it escalates so quickly. Because like the last two scenes where this has happened, after he pulls the severed head out of the bag and everybody starts screaming, he again starts honking and everybody is honking all at one time. And there's a lot of chaos happening again in the back of the bus. And then Bonnie hits him with the plywood. It knocks his little like Oni mask or whatever from across his lower face off. And we get to see,
like, jaw guard.
Yeah, yeah. We see that he's missing his jaw. Hence why he wears the mask, is like, mouth is just kind of hanging open. And then then they escape for roughly 6 seconds.
Right.
And so yeah, it Corey and Bonnie run out, and Corey starts falling behind a little bit, and Bonnie like starts escaping, and then Dandy, my boy, is just running into the woods and bonks her. And yeah, incorrect Foley here. They make it sound like he hits her with a metal plate.
Right, yeah. Which,
and like they have a quick talk, you know, because she's panicking. She's like, there's a killer in the woods. There's a killer. We got to go. And he's just like, oh, okay, calm down. What do we need to do? There's a killer. Okay, yeah. I got you. All right, yeah, no problem. And then he just like picks her up and fireman carries her and starts walking her back towards where she, like, he's like, where was he? Oh, that way? Okay, great. And then he scoops her up and starts walking back. He gets to the bus, and as he's walking in, he's like, homie, you're not going to believe what I got you for Christmas.
Truly the best friend a boy could have.
Serious.
And she's screaming the whole time, of course, like, why would you do this? What's wrong with you? As he's just like, hey, that clown's gonna love this.
Yeah, you don't expect the Dandy Twisty, you know, sync up tag team, but when it happens, it's pretty good, I gotta say.
It's also like very Looney Tunes-y, but in a way that I'm into, because it really works when one of the pair is like a spooky clown. Yeah. It plays okay.
No, yeah. Absolutely. Oh, man.
Twisty's like grateful for Dandy bringing the girl back, but you can see like on his face when he's looking away from Dandy, and only we, the audience, can see that he's like, oh brother, now I got to deal with this guy all the time, because now he's okay with my murders or whatever, which again is so funny because this could all be solved by Twisty just murdering Dandy, but he won't for some reason. Yeah.
Like, it's like I was gonna almost make a joke, like, oh shit, this guy knows how to kill people now. You know what I mean? Like, I'm really gonna fall under suspicion.
How am I gonna get rid of this asshole?
Oh, fuck the luck. Oh, Twisty.
I'll never think of a way to handle this guy.
Well, it's back to the circus. Unfortunately, we're not with our funny little fellas anymore. And like, there's a very weird, long, mournful shot of the circus at night, which is weird because nothing bad. Well, I guess he did get the shit beat out of him. Nothing that bad has happened to everybody yet. Jimmy like storms into Elsa's tent and she's like, hey, you can't just come in here. And he's like, I got to talk to you. And he's got like his face is fully fucked up. Like someone has clearly fucked him up.
Yeah.
Hey, that's like, if you're going to harass another performer or you're going to rough him up, not the face. I'm like, come on, man. Come on. That's you gotta pay the bills. Come on. No, not the face. Hey, professionalism here. And yeah, so Jimmy walks in and goes, hey, Elsa, we need to get rid of Del. To which Elsa goes, no, we need a very strong man around for protection until the serial killer is caught. I guess Elsa gives a fuck about that now.
Yeah.
Also, she's like housing a murderer. Like the twins killed their mom. How are you not sure? Or how are you sure that they aren't the serial killer? Like... they're already being like their crime is being lumped in with the serial killer's crime. Why are you so certain that they're not the serial killer? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jimmy has an answer to this, though. He's like, wait, you need a strong guy to protect the circus? I'm a strong guy who can protect the circus. I killed that cop. And instead of Elsa being like, God damn it, Jimmy. She's like, oh, sick.
I underestimated you, Jimmy. You have such strong hand. And he puts a cop badge down on the table and goes, here, just in case, I kept proof. Which to which he goes, great, I love that. Stupid motherfuckers. And then to further drive the point home of we need Del out of here, he goes, and here's the playbill he was hanging up to advertise for the show today, and it shows that she is on the very bottom listed as, like, you know, an accessory act.
Right.
And, that immediately makes her pivot into, we gotta get rid of this guy. We're gonna have to kill this guy, Hamtaro. It's just, damn. Like, really, like, but why? Yeah. So the show starts up, and for some reason, the strongman is the lead now too. Like he's also the ringmaster or whatever.
Says, can you bark? But like I always thought, carnival barkers were like one of those like step right up, come and see the
show. Yeah, like outside. Yes, correct. Right.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah.
You are right.
So maybe they don't know what barking is, but like, because that's what I was like. Do I have that wrong or what? But yeah, so. Suddenly he's the ringmaster, I guess, because he's in charge too. We've just doing that. I don't know.
And the other thing, Slow Beef, is like the way a freak show generally was structured was, again, as we've explained before, as a sideshow where it was just a exhibit hall that you walked through. There wasn't a guy who went, and if you look over here, there's a little guy who eats a chicken head. Check that shit out. All right, nice. Okay. Now, if you look over here, you'll see... two little ladies with one body singing a song from 30 years in the fucking future. Is that crazy or what?
I'm a cool guy for this very tent. Yeah.
Speaking of a little lady singing a song from 30 years in the future, after we're treated to seeing Meep eat a chicken head, his only bit, by the way, they only ever let Meep eat chicken heads.
Yeah. Meep sucks. Meep, they try to make Meep have like a tragic arc, and it really doesn't play.
I hate this tragic arc so much. Fuck Meep so bad.
We're gonna go from knowing nothing about Meep except for that he eats chicken heads and he's a little guy to, oh no, Meep.
We're gonna go from I don't know a lot about Meep to my life was so much better when I didn't know shit about Meep. Fucking I hate Meep.
So they pivot from Meep, thank God, to Dot and Bet singing "Criminal" by Fiona Apple.
You know, the famous song that was in the 60s, right? The 1960s song that was a hit that everybody would know from that time period?
Also, like, a weird song to choose to sing when you're, like, currently on, you know, investigation for murder. I feel like maybe you'd go with, like, Sinatra.
Something not with the word criminal in it, which you are. And yeah. Are not trying to call it that you do, right?
Yeah. Also, like, there's a lot of weird little anachronistic things that happen over the course of this episode, and I try not to call them out too much, because I find it like, eh, whatever, someone forgot to, you know, change a mailbox label. Who gives a shit?
Right.
But this sticks out so bad in every way, because it's not just, like, the filming of it is, like, way over caliber, and then the production, again, sounds like really aggressively studio, like really like Fortnite kids singing levels of like, you need to stop touching the tools this much. And also, yeah, just literally a song from a different time period, like the full anachronism. Like, it's rough.
And also, it's one of those songs, some of you may not like immediately know what song that is when we say the name. It's one of those songs that, like, is in a lot of movies, and a lot of people know it from that. So, like, even if you don't know the song, I don't really know the song, but as soon as it started, I'm like, that does not sound like a song from the 60s. Also, I think I know that song. And then I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, it's because it's a song from 1997 that was, like, a really popular song. I see.
Right.
Yeah, like... I mean, Fiona Apple was, like, really... First of all, Fiona Apple was, like, yeah, huge. And then the other thing is, Fiona Apple, to me at least, is one of those artists that has a very definitive, like, her sound is one of the sounds that, like, defines the 90s to me. Like, like, truly, like, Fiona Apple, like, no one really made music too much like her afterwards or before. It's like, it really is locked in a place in time, which makes it such a weird pick. Such a weird pick for this. Yeah.
I think, like, honestly, it would have... It was just as, like, stark of a contrast and just as startling as if Dot had just started singing All Star by Smash Mouth. Like, it's that jarring of a juxtaposition of, like, oh, shit, that definitely doesn't belong here. What are you doing?
So it's obviously intentional, too, right? Because it's, like... You know, of course, like, because it's so anachronistic. It's not like they missed it by 3 or 5 years. Like, they plainly knew what they were doing. But it's like you would do that for a very big, like, good artistic choice, right? Except, like, it's Dot calling out the fact that she is a criminal. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's much more deeper meaning behind that. So it's like, why?
I did a murder, and I want everyone to know about it. Anyway, here's my musical number.
And also, people are, like, popping off and crowd surfing and shit, and it just doesn't make sense on, like, any level.
Right?
Because it's like a small little sideshow thing, A. B, it's not like a Fiona Apple's, like, number one, like, open the pit song, you know?
Yeah.
She wasn't like, I want y'all to make a fucking wall of death. Three over here, slam together. Like, it's not that kind of show, you know? Like, she's not throwing blood in the audience in the first three rows. Like, it's fucking Fiona Apple.
Right, yeah.
She was, like, a very sad lady who was angry sometimes. That was most of her deal.
We cannot overstate. They are going apeshit in the pit for this song. Like, they are absolutely disrespecting their surroundings. Everyone is losing their fucking mind. And I'm like, I got to see Hatsune Miku live, like, 7 years ago, which is, like, a big deal for Little Liz. Like, huge moment in my life.
Sure.
Not even one-eighth of the energy these people are showing for... The Fiona Apple cover done by Dot and Bet.
Right.
I have been to shows by, like, Mastodon where I've seen people, like, get hit in the face in a mosh pit that still, I would say, were, like, less energy overall than this Fiona Apple. Or, like, there was one show, a Killswitch Engage, where someone threw a shoe from the balcony that hit me in the fucking head. Like, that, even that, I think, was, like, more relaxed than this Fiona Apple show.
How bad do you fuck up a freak show where people are, like, looking at the headline act, like, oh my god, what a song! You know, like, holy shit, like, just do a regular fucking talent show then, you idiots. Like, there's no point then.
Yeah, or a concert. Just have a concert. Just do a concert. Be a music show.
Like, this is, you've totally forgotten about the whole, like, laugh, like, gawk at our deformities bit, you know? Maybe a good thing. But still, like, it's not the point. Damn it.
Well, Elsa and Bette once again are upset that they're being blown out by Dot just being able to sing songs from the future, which, like, fair. I'd get fucked up by that, too. Yeah, if someone just came on and started spitting some 2070 bars, I'd be like, all right, hey, you got me. So they're upset. And then... yeah, I think this has to be the next day or later the same day. Time is meaningless here. A bunch of cops pull up. This time they have a warrant. The warrant is based off an anonymous tip they got. And the anonymous tip pretty clearly told them they need to search Dell's trailer. The cops start flipping, you know, everything over. And then Dell, like, just walks up to Jimmy and is like, hey, I know you're trying to frame me for murder. Don't do that. Like, that's basically the exchange, yeah, right? No, like, he's just like, yeah, hey, I know, man. I saw you show that cop's badge. Why'd you keep proof, by the way? Are you fucking stupid? To which the answer is, yeah, Jimmy's fucking stupid because he called the cops and I guess just like left the badge under Dell's pillow or somewhere really easy to find or something.
Yep.
Because, yeah, a cop comes out of a random tent and goes, we found them. It's this son of a bitch. And who are they dragging out other than meep, 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 meep. Like, they literally have Meep going full Pokemon mode, just honking Meep repeatedly as being dragged out. And yeah, the police badge was under Meep's mattress, and they're like, well, I guess Meep did it. Like,
it's, which, hey. We haven't described Meep. Meep is like 2 feet tall, maybe. 2.5, maybe. And it's like... a little guy they make wear, like, only the body piece of a Cookie Monster outfit. So just, like, a fluffy blue down pillow.
Like a big feather boa. Yeah.
Meep is a callback, I think, to the movie Freaks, which there is another more definite callback to the exact same thing later. Where I think it's the human duck or something. It's like the big thing at the end is the freak who like suddenly no longer has like arm. You know, they're like really tiny and they can't move and stuff. You know, like and so Meep is that plus the carnival geek. Except if you want to know Meep person, Meep is an animal. Like Meep is not a person in any stretch of the term as far as the American Horror Story writers are concerned.
The way they're written in story.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like they literally don't get lines. They just get panicked reactions. Meep, so meep, yeah, absolutely.
Meep, yeah. Meep, meep. Yeah. Like an alarm clock, a distressed alarm clock.
Whoa, is Meep in the call with us now? Holy shit.
It's like, wow, thanks to the subtotal of your life story, Meep character I'm supposed to fucking love and care about.
So the police drag away a honking Meep again, and then they bring him to jail, and they're just like, we're going to put you in the cell with the nastiest fuckers we got. And it's like, why? They're like, I don't know. We don't like you, Meep.
You're obviously a cop killer, Meep. And there's like one throwaway line the cops give, like, I don't think the sergeant was killed by this guy.
Yeah. It's so funny. Yeah, one reasonable guy being like, hey, man, that was probably a plant. That seems like really fucking stupid to just leave under your mattress. And this dude doesn't seem like capable of like decisions.
Now,
So,
I don't know much about prison either, nor do I know much about 1950s prison in Florida. I'm going to guess, though, if you killed a cop, criminals might like you, actually. But here in this jail, they're like, oh, a killer, huh? I bet you're also a pedophile. Which is like, wait, what? Where did that come from?
But yeah, it doesn't really make sense. That's not usually how that line goes. Also, they like throw him in like a drunk tank where you like hold a couple guys who like have drank too much. Not guys who killed a cop.
Right. insane.
That's like a different tier. They skip you right to platinum service, brother. You go right to a single cell. No, right. You don't got to wait in line or anything.
It's like how a kid would write like a justice system, like, and then the police take him right to jail. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, no, he wouldn't be there with other like murderers and stuff. Because then they're like, we'll get you. And what does Meep do? Meep literally goes meep meep. You know, like a Pokemon. And like
you curls got, you, up in a ball in a bench in the fetal position, going meep 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 meep. And all these guys so walk up beautiful. Like time to kill.
Yeah. Like, we cannot. We there is physically no way for us to like adequately explain how the shot of Meep in the corner curled in a ball, the way they have the lighting on him and the way he's just like quivering and being like meep meep meep, it is the most pitiful, like in the arms of the angels ass shot I have ever seen in my life.
There is no human being who could see that and be like, I need to finish the job.
Also, like, really nice of all these, like, rowdy, giant, burly men to, like, not fight with each other. But the second they toss Meep in there, they're like, all right, time to do what we came here to do.
Time to kick around a human turkey, I guess. Like, yeah. I mean, all right. Who probably also touches kids, I suppose, you know?
Literally, whatever. Going back to them not treating Meep like a person, like he's an animal, this is the equivalent of, it would have been literally thematically the same thing if they were like, toss him in the shark tank out back, and then they just tossed him into a tank full of sharks. Like, plot-wise, the same exact outcome happens. Meep gets put in a dangerous hole with things that wish him harm, and he gets harmed. Ta-da!
But Meep then, he doesn't seem to have the capacity to actually have a job, you know, like to have agreed to have joined the freak show or anything, because he is just like, you know, just this monosyllabic person. I don't know. Like, Meep doesn't seem like he writes. I don't know. Yeah. So, because they want you to be he's a cartoon character they wrote in, basically, so.
So. After we see the destruction of Meep, we head back to Elsa being really weird, because they realize now that they want to have a character talk with only one of the twins, but they've unfortunately created a contrivance where those two characters are attached. They now have to have Elsa sneak in at night where Bette is still awake, but Dot is asleep. And so Elsa can quietly talk to Bette, to which I have to say, but they share thoughts. Hold on. Wait, if one of them is asleep and the other's awake, do you think she can, like, see the dream? We can't get lost in this.
You know, let's even say when you're asleep, you can't even read thoughts. You know, I'm a pretty heavy sleeper, but you know what's not heavy is when a person lying next to me is speaking or even whispering a lot. And imagine if you're the same person. Like, there's someone whose head is right literally there. Like, you can't.
Like, you have bones that are attached completely from where your mouth is to their ear canal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so ridiculous. But here we are, you know, like, yeah. So somehow, yeah, I'm not going to see this or anything. It's crazy.
And yeah, basically Elsa just gives her a little, oh, don't worry, your sister's not actually that much better than you. We'll manage to beat her, don't worry. To which Dot kind of gives her a whole, like, Dot wakes up for a second and asks Bette, hey, are you sleep talking? And she goes, no, Elsa's here to talk to me. And she goes, great, tell her to fuck off, I'm trying to sleep. Which, correct,
yeah,
good.
Actually, yeah, right?
Great. And yeah, Elsa's like, oh, she's just the nasty one. Don't let your nice mind be poisoned by the nasty one or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And then puts like a knife next to her pillow. Like, she just is like, here's a knife, by the way. Like, don't let her poison you. Here's a knife. Like, hey, if they're like attached. Does no one get this? Does no one see this?
I know you like your singing, but guess what? There's more.
Like, yeah, yeah. Okay, kill your attached twin, but don't die. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how to do that.
We already tried it once. That's how we got in this mess.
Mm-hmm. So, cut back to Jimmy drunk in the middle of the circus because he got beat up by Dell and then tried the worst evidence plan in history, and it backfired stupider than anyone could have imagined. Ethel comes up and goes, "Oh, I was always so proud of you for not drinking. Why are you drinking?" And he goes, I fucked up. I made Meep in trouble. I really did bad for Meep."
This, like, and it kills me because, yeah, they're Adley's like, "No, Meep, why? You're so innocent. Like, I don't know Meep. I never cared about Meep. Why are you now trying to pretend I do, American Horror Story? Like, fucking Meep. He sucks so bad."
But he's just a little guy. He's just a little guy. No one was there for him in his hour of need. And Jimmy's real sad about it. And he's like, "I gotta make things right, Ma. I gotta make things right for Meep." And then he starts stumbling out of there. And she's like, "You stay away from Dell, Jimmy." And Jimmy's like, "I don't give a fuck about Dell.
I'm gonna turn myself in. Yeah, fuck Dell. I'm gonna turn myself into the cops." And then the cops... fucking, the boys are in the back of the pickup truck holding the bag, smiling their ass off. The truck rolls in and they just dump a sack on the ground and go, "Good luck with that." And then they drive off and you bet it's Meep's corpse because Meep's fucking dead. They just killed Meep.
No. God, specialist little guy.
Like, I guess they realized that, like, having them be the bad guys purely because, like, they put a curfew out because there's a serial killer, like, isn't good enough. Like, that's not, like, enough to be a villain. Like, "Hey, we want there to be a curfew. You bastard." So they had to be like, "They killed Meep, too."
Who's Meep again? Oh, yeah, all right. Yeah, you bastards. Yeah, Meep.
Oh, my God, they killed Meep.
Now who's going to bite the heads off of all of these chickens? Guess we'll get Bette and Dot to do it.
Yeah.
Or that and guy. Yeah, that's...
Yep. Yeah.
That's the end of the episode. That's it. They just dump Meep off and go, "We've closed off the Meep plot line." And then they drive off into the night. Bless them. Yeah, so that's episode 2. Again, just lightning pace. I have to admit, historically, American Horror Story, like, goes apeshit for 2 to 3 episodes, and then they just, like, hit a wall and forget to do any plot progression for, like, 6 episodes. Mm. So I don't know if we're there yet.
I mean...
But I'm kind of hoping a little bit, because, like, so much is happening right now. And none of it's good.
I don't remember what, like, would happen. I have, like, vague memories of this episode. You know what I mean? Like, I remember hating Meep this season. That for sure. But, like, nothing else. Meep was terrible. But, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have, like, in my mind, unlike all of our other seasons, I, like, don't have a solid, like, timeline of events of this season in my mind. I just know that there is a random standout episode that we're not near yet that is the standout episode of the mm-hmm. season.
Yep.
Well, I guess with that little promise of a treat down the road, we'll end for today. Catch you in the next episode, everybody.
Later.
Thanks for listening. Have a great night.